哎呀呀嘿呀嘿呀呀嘿呀嘿呀呀嘿呀嘿，哎呀呀嘿呀嘿呀呀嘿呀嘿呀呀嘿呀嘿。Elder Voices, a window to the past, a door to the future.
Ay, 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 hey, ay, ay, hey.
Caleb Loman Pangawi. I was born November 28, 1941. My birth record says Savunga, but I was born at the camp about 60 miles east of the island, the trapping camp. Like all homes back in those days, the trapping camp was just one big room, about 14 by 14 or even smaller. Of course, it was used as a bedroom, a kitchen, a living room, you know, the whole works. But our house in Savunga was a two-story house. It was shared. The Wangtalans were upstairs in the upstairs area. We lived in the downstairs area. So it was that way, where a family of five plus the grandmother, and then we had other relatives that lived with us, Dennis and Helen, whose parents passed away, moved in with us and grew up with us. And they, you know, were like our brothers and sisters. Nick Wangtalan's wife, Lucille, they took my mother when she was going to go into labor from our camp over to Wangtalan's camp, which was about 20 miles away from our camp. And she delivered, or helped deliver me. So I don't know how some of the details of that delivery would have been, but you know, you can imagine how crude and it must have been to be in a camp with no electricity. My mother came through it healthy, and I came through healthy. My grandmother, her husband had passed away when my father was 16 years old, so she lived with my parents. In fact, she's the one that basically raised me. Nora, Eskimo name was Ngatlak. It's a funny name. It's like something that somebody had eaten before and is still left over. I raised as her child. Under our tradition, they give grandparents a child to raise, and that's what happened. I was her child to be raised. And even though I knew after I grew up that she was not my mother, and that, you know, my mom and dad were the real parents, you still relate to it as your mother, you know, my grandmother as my mother. Sometimes she'd take me along to when she's going to pick greens or berries or other activities that she would do. I'd have to go along with her to help out, either to pack the stuff back to the camp or to home at Savunga. And during those times, she spent a lot of time telling me stories or telling me our history as a clan. You know, we go by clans on the island. We're the Kiwami clan. Our people, the Pangawis, the Galagagans, the Kingikaks, Wangtalans were all from one clan. And then on the other parts are the Buelamis, who are from the south side of the island, or the other Snamis, who are from the beach people. And my grandmother, when she took me along, would teach us about our clan system and also about respect and about nature. And I remember one time we were out there, she was picking greens, and as a child, you know, when you were 8 years old, you'd kind of run around. You didn't want to pick greens, you didn't want to pick berries, you want to have fun and chase animals or whatever. And one time she sat me down and she was taking a break, and she said, "Son, in our language. He said, you got to listen to the whispers of the grass. And it took me many years to understand what that meant. What did she mean by listening to the whispers of the grass? And it meant that there are times when you need to sit down and hear things around you, to be sensitive to things that are in your environment, whether it's the wind or the grasses or birds, to have that sensitivity and be able to take the time to really enjoy that. To me, it's something that has always made me more environmentally conscious of who I am and what I am and where I grew up. Every summer, we'd go down the south side of the island and get the camp ready for trapping. My father would go seal hunting and bird hunting and fishing. But coming winter, he'd trap for white foxes for income. And that's what we would do. Every August, we'd cross the island by dog team and then get on a skin boat and travel along the lagoons. The dog team's pulling the boat until we get to the camp. And it was a slow-paced journey. There were no rush. We could stop and visit other people that were at their camps and take our time, and we got there when we got there. Oh, it was very enjoyable because we were not under pressure to do things as kids. You know, we just kind of went along for the ride but help out on different things. You know, good memories, let's put it that way. Very good memories as a child to go through that. Springtime was a big walrus hunting time. A lot of the meat, of course, is stored for the winter, both for human consumption and also for dogs, because dogs were our main source of transportation in the wintertime. And so you needed to feed them and keep them in good shape. Walrus had to be butchered out in the ocean. It's too big to haul back, so they would, butcher it out there in big chunks of hide and blubber and meat. And then when you bring it back to the village, of course, it could be, cut into smaller pieces. Some of the meat would be hung to dry, but most of the manguna would be put away in the ice cellars, for winter use. We were always eating marine mammals because that's all we lived on was walrus and seals, and because we didn't have any land animals except for some reindeer. But some of my best memories about eating those were that sometime my grandmother would collect these krill and use that as part of cooking the seal meat. And that krill, which is kind of like a shrimp, would give flavor, different flavor to the seal meat. And it's like eating Chinese food. Really, really, it made a difference, something different than what you would normally be eating. So that was something I treasure and remember, that she was able to go out. My sister tells me that she would cut strips of blubber, dip them in the water when all these krill are on there, and they would cling to the blubber. Then she would pull it out and strip them from the blubber. That's how she collected the krill to cook with our seal meat. And then, of course, seals, bearded seals and ring seals. But bird hunting, gathering wood. Even gathering wood was fun because our father made it fun. He'd take a bunch of us kids on a skin boat and go down the coast. And as kids, he'd make it a competition for us to gather wood. And then when we got back home, the kids from other families could take their share of wood. And so they had a sense of helping, but also sense of receiving something when they got back home. So they had pride that they were able to go and then bring home something to their families. It's amazing when you think back that I remember being bored. We were playing outdoors. We played games with our cousins. We played this Eskimo football, tag, and sometimes just being boys, get into mischief. There was a rule on the village that we are never supposed to go to the bluffs where the seabirds are, because it's dangerous. You know, one could fall and get injured or killed. One time, me and my two cousins, Joshua Wangitalan and Vincent Sivahak, it was time when the birds are almost fledging. The baby birds are in full feathers and they're fat and they're good to eat. And we decided that we'd go over to the cliffs and gather some of these baby birds. And we snuck out away from the village and went over there and started digging around in the rubble of the rocks to gather baby birds. And we decided that we'd go down to the bottom of the cliffs where we can catch bigger ones, some of the bigger birds. And Joshua and I went down on an area that is not so steep. But our cousin Vincent, who had been behind us, had gone over to look down on the steep side and saw a sign where there was looked like they had a nest of these birds. And he decided that he'd go down and get these birds. And in the meantime, Joshua and I have gone down to the bottom. And then we heard him yell, and I remember looking back and see him falling down and hit a rock and then bounce and then disappear behind the other rubble. So we ran over. We're about 9 years old. We ran over, and he was laying on the ground. And we had to carry him home. He was injured. But we were extremely scared. Remember, this is something that was taboo, and we did it, and we're in big trouble. But we did get scolding once we got home. That terrible. He was terrible. You know, we did things that were also fun. Like I mentioned, I don't ever remember being bored because we were so active in things, and people involved us in their work activities, whether it's feeding the dogs, chopping wood, getting water, or in the springtime when they're spring hunting for walrus and marine mammals or seals and ugruks, that we'd help haul those things back to the village. So we were always part of that activity. And we were also told to respect the elders and help people who needed help. And it was a community that raised us together. If we were doing something wrong, another elder, another adult could scold you. And unfortunately, that doesn't happen, you know, nowadays. People don't camp anymore. You don't see that. You spend summer away from the village to do their fishing and gathering of food, and then go back when the school started. People don't do that anymore. Christmas, Thanksgiving were major, major events in the community where it was a big celebration, and the whole community got involved in sharing. And it seemed like back in those days, there was more unity, more cohesiveness in the community. There was less fighting between the people and cooperation between the families and people. I think we've lost some of those things. In our tradition, the uncles taught you how to hunt and fish. It was a way, I think, where you would be disciplined and learn, whereas a parent might be more protective, an uncle could be more free to scold you, to show you, and be hands-on. My uncles, Donald and Walter and Jimmy Tooley, as a child, my first skin boat hunting was with Jimmy Tooley. I was assigned to their group, and I always tell them I was a gopher. I sat in the back behind, just in front of Jimmy Tooley, and you just basically watch and bail the boat out, you know, and stay out of the way, you know, don't get in the way. But that's how us kids learn, you know, during those ages, that you observed and learned. And then when you get a little bit older, they start getting more involved in different activities. I think one has to experience the ocean to know what it's like. You know, when you're out there, even though it's intense kind of an effort, that there's peacefulness about the ice and the ocean. It's a balance of beautiful scenery and danger. Things could get dangerous in a hurry. Being out there in a skin boat, it's a magnificent thing in that it's a skin boat was totally made from local products. The walrus skin, the driftwood, the ropes that, you know, tie the boat down, and then everything, our floats were made from seal skin. So everything about it was from our own resources. Nowadays, nobody makes those kind of anymore, and they were not real fast, but it was good. You seem to see more, you seem to observe more when you're going somewhere slower than when the speedboat, when you're zipping by and not really see everything at all. My father, they basically made their own hand tools, adzes and file, things that they would use for making skin boats or sleds. It was all handmade, and there was a workshop in the community where people would do these kind of things, and some of the men would gather together and watch and give pointers and socialize. Again, you know, it was more of a community effort, community togetherness that you saw in those kind of things. And they shared equipment. Sometimes there'd be competition, like for who has the fastest dog team when they're hunting. I've saved some of the old stuff that my father used to have and my grandmother. Scrapers, handmade scrapers, tools made from ivory, hooks, harpoon heads, ice testers. You know, all those things were made from local products and not, you know, something you bought. And unfortunately, nowadays, we've lost some of those things that the people used to make, you know, with their own hands. We started our school in Yupik. Our teacher was a Yupik teacher, because none of us know how to speak English at all as children, especially those of us who grew up at camp. So the first teachings of Dick and Jane and ABCs and 1-2-3s were all in Yupik. And then after second grade, you could move up to the English teachers or the teachers that are from outside. I remember I flunked third grade or got sent back from third grade to second grade because I could not get it. I could not get English. I could not get the teaching that our English teacher was, you know, trying to teach us. So I got sent back to second grade so I can learn a little bit more English. And then I guess I was smart enough eventually that I was able to graduate from school and then go on to high school and a little bit of college. There were no local high schools back in those days, and very few of the children our age went away to high school. most of the kids stayed home because, you know, it's far away. You're being separated from your parents. At that time, too, probably did not seem necessary that the children had to go away for higher education. But both my brother and I were able to go to high school. I know my father was reluctant for me to go because he needed help at home. My brother and I were the only two boys in our family, and we had three other sisters, but there was nobody to help in the family with dogs, and our father was working at the Air Force Base, and he needed somebody home to help with, you know, home and hunting stuff. But he gave in and let me go to high school at Sheldon Jackson. It's at Sitka, Alaska. It's a Christian school, Presbyterian school. Unfortunately, it had to close because of money situations. But again, I think those years when a lot of us went to boarding schools, it gave us a sense of independence. It gave us more awareness of what the world was like, and then also opportunity for us to meet other children from other communities, other races as well. And those contacts, when organizing for AFN and also for land claims, it really pulled people together because we were able to know that we all shared the same things and had same concerns and wanted to work together for benefit of all Alaska Natives. I believe in God, I believe in Jesus, I believe in salvation. And to me, I think that's very important, that the Christian values of love one another and be kind to others are two major things that people should be familiar with and know. And secondly, know who you are. Know inside yourself as to who you are, whether you're somebody from a certain village, or you're an Eskimo, you're an Inupiaq, or a Yupik, or, you know, any of those things. Have pride in yourself as to who you are. And I think to me that can carry you a long ways in terms of having pride in yourself. When we would go by dog team from our camp back to Savunga, because we would hit all the other camps on the way, and those families would join us, and we'd all travel together, and it was like a big caravan. Because everybody, by the time we hit the last camp, it'd be about 10 dog teams all traveling back to Savunga for Christmas. But it was the beauty of traveling in the wintertime. As a child, you want to stick your head out of the canvas and look around. And they always try to, you know, if it's windy or blowing, they try to push your head down under to keep you warm. And then seeing the mountains. When we went through the mountains to get back to the village, I always remember those sceneries, seeing those mountains. And I can even see the shapes of different mountains as we traveled. And the quietness of traveling with dog teams. You just hear the runners creeping in the snow, occasional order commands from my dad to the dogs. But otherwise, it was a very quiet way of traveling across all those miles. we're so busy now. We don't have time for things. We're busy with work, busy, maybe just busy. We don't take time to relax and enjoy things the way we should.
You've been listening to Elder Voices, a production of KNOM.